Hi everyone, and welcome back to the BPN podcast, your go-to space for all things personal development, career support, and well-being for apprentices. I'm Amt, and joined this time by my co-host Supriya.
Hi everybody, how are you?
Nice of you to be here today, thank you. And then for this particular podcast, where we will be discussing human resources, I'm delighted to also welcome our special guest, Matthew Smith, MBE, who is a participant on our school Senior Leader Level 7 apprenticeships. Hi, Matthew.
Hello, nice to be with you both.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Good to have you here again today. Now, yeah, this topic of human resources, it's a topic that might be very familiar to some of you listening. It might be something that you find possibly a little bit scary, or, you know, the unknown can sometimes be slightly off-putting. So let's explore that today. Now, I know, Supriya, you've got some thoughts to start off on just that whole idea of, you know, why is HR a thing? Why is it important?
I think senior leaders very quickly realize that HR is the one that drives the culture of an organization. And it does that by aligning the workforce capabilities to the strategic goals of the organization. And we don't realize it, that it does, but what the way it does it is through that strict regulatory compliance, which drives the positive work ethics. And what it also does is that brings in that consistency which actually fosters the social capital within the organization, which is so important for the organization to grow and sustain and do better and better.
Mm. Yeah, it's really important. And then Matthew, you know, you're at the front line at the moment. You know, you're within the schools. What are your thoughts? And when you hear HR, what does that mean to you?
I hear a trade-off needing to be struck. I think all good leaders in education aren't often taught some of these skills. And I think if you're going to influence decision-making or be supportive in decision-making, you need to be consistent. I think consistency is key for me. And I think you can be a very open and honest and direct and sort of upfront leader when it comes to dealing with HR related matters, or you could maybe take a more sort of softly nurturing and a bit of a longer term approach to supporting or developing. And both of those come with their advantages and their disadvantages, and both will impact, as I say, sort of the culture and the feel within a school and that social capital that you get from it. Some people really thrive knowing exactly what is wrong, when it's wrong, and how to correct it. Other people can't be confronted with that level of challenge or directness straight away and need a much more softly approach. What you don't want to do is get the wrong approach for the wrong person, because that ultimately ends up in really difficult sort of situations that really do hamper decision making and sort of progress for the schools.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, they're taking the different perspectives there. I would certainly say your point you said at the start about, leaders not being prepared and not just not being knowledgeable. Well, yeah, that's firsthand for me. I would say exactly that despite various programs of study, you know, despite various qualifications that can be taken, unless you are a HR specialist, you progress through leadership in schools from being a teacher. Typically, the teacher becomes the head teacher, who is then suddenly responsible for everything, not just... I've always had that interesting thing about the type, you know, a head teacher. You are head of the teachers, but you're also head of HR, legal, premises, facilities, payroll, everything else comes with it. And I didn't have any specific training in those things before I took on those roles. Yeah. I don't know... Yeah. Yeah, Matthew also appear, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd also agree with that sometimes the hardest job in HR is for those teachers or head teachers that come in new. So the workforce on a whole have never seen that person teach. How can they criticize my learning, or how can they praise my outcomes or my assessment or my planning? And if they haven't been able to if the staff haven't been able to see it. And I think that's sort of, again, thinking about the style and the approach that you want to take and foster, you know, any teacher should be able to really go into any setting and be able to teach, you know, like any accountant should be able to take any set of accounts and, you know, an account for them and create the necessary documents. So I think, yeah, just how you approach that situation. But I also agree, a head teacher is much more than just teaching. It's probably one of the smallest parts of the job now that they do, given all of the other complexities and all of the pressures from internal and external stakeholders.
Yeah. Yeah, Supriya, so I'm going to say.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that a head teacher's role is a very lonely role, despite them being surrounded by all these, you know, all staff members. And while the head teacher grapples with all the financial issues, what we very quickly realize as head teachers is that human resources is the biggest, you know, contributor to the expenditure that we have, and therefore very, very valuable asset of the organization. Sometimes we head teachers are not given the right headspace to consider that before they join a new organization. Like Matthew said, to build in that credibility, we train head teachers to be good at finance, but do we actually train them to be good at human resources?
I think it was you or both of you, I think I mentioned social, this kind of concept of social capital. So we could sort of define this perhaps for those of you listening now, that phrase could be familiar to you. It might be something new. So it's seen as the value created through relationships, trust, networks, and informal influence. So if you think about organizations generally measuring things through financial performance or productivity, which then could be, you know, data, results, etc., workforce turnover, absence, etc., does your organization, or have you, you know, if you're listening now, have you ever thought about how do you measure social capital? Which, in other words, is the value that is almost you can't see it, you can't put numbers to it, maybe, that is built through the relationships and trusts. Trust within your networks, which potentially takes a very long time to build, but can quite quickly be undermined. And another concept then that you might want to have a look at, again, the resources are available as part of our apprenticeship programs with our Level 7 senior leader, is the concept of organizational citizenship behavior, which is quite a mouthful. So it's OCB. And this is what they call the discretionary effort people choose to give. So they're not contractually obliged to. It's people feel they want to give more, something that isn't written necessarily into their job description. So, for example, this could be, you know, you've got two departments. They're both well-resourced. They're fully staffed. They've got plenty of funding. But for some reason, one area is performing better. And that might be because of this concept of organizational citizenship behavior. One group might just be choosing to give more discretionary effort as a result of its connection and the value that it feels it's got within its own department. So I don't know, any thoughts on that, Matthew? There are other kind of concepts that we've got going around, but, you know, any response to that?
I think on OCB, what I would say on that, firstly, is that being teams that are really conscientious, I think exceeding, you can't expect anybody to exceed the basics of the job requirement, the person's spec, but you hope to. You hope you find people that buy into what you do, your vision, your goal. And I always say, and so do other colleagues in other special schools in particular, where we see this a lot, is what do people do when you're not looking? What do they actually do? What are they doing to help and support the things that will never go never be noticed, never be done for praise? Did they pick that thing up? Did they go and help? Did they reach out to that member of staff? Did they check in on their team after a difficult day? And I think that's really, really important as part of that to me. The other area for me is around that issue or the concept of talent hoarding, where we see that, you know, certain people, managers end up retaining, you know, in talented employees in that role and don't wish to sort of promote them or give them a further opportunities because of the value that they bring. And I think that's something at the school that I work at that we've challenged over the years, and we're very much for providing routes for internal promotion. There aren't always that many routes for internal promotion, particularly for support staff. And what we like to do is we like to give that shining star, that employee that's really shining out, that there's that reluctance to give the chance. So we like to give them a trial and let them really see what they can do, because what they can currently do well might not transfer as well into the new role. So setting a very open and honest trial period to allow us, you know, both parties to assess that is good. But what we're also looking for is, why did that person shine within that team? Was it something within them that stopped others from shining? Do we have a poor team, or do we just need to support the rest of the team because there are some other potentially shining stars there as well? And if managed well, then you can have an internal promotion that's working really well, and a team that has, you know, been able to absorb the loss, but also have stepped up to the plate, which has also probably allowed you to backfill, you know, into that team as well. So talent hoarding is a very real issue and a real problem in many schools. But I think people need to just flip it on its head and see how they can find the best out of the situation.
I think it's
quite interesting, you know, Matthew talking about talent hoarding. And as you were saying these things, Matthew, what really made me reflect on that, talent hoarding is rightly or wrongly a validation of the OCB, because who values you? How do you get value? Because you are bringing that extra, extra mile to the to the journey that senior leaders want to propagate within their organization. So it is in that sense they might feel that they're justified in talent hoarding, but I also reflect whether talent hoarding is a lazy leader's way to not provide support or not look over in the horizon, even within their own staff members internally, to find out, are there any other people who have never had that experience of leadership, but actually have got greater potential. And by doing talent hoarding, you're sending a message to people who have never had that experience, saying you're not good enough because you've not had that experience. And maybe you need to go somewhere else to get the experience and then come back to us, equipped for us to join, for you to join our team. And that is really heartbreaking because, Matthew, as you said, there are so many people who will grow through the roles given the right support. And if you don't give the support, how do we make sure that our organizations grow? So you're absolutely right. I agree with you.
Yeah. And there's a concept that, again, you know, as you're listening, reflect on that, you might want to pause the podcast itself and have a little think about that and think of examples in your own workplace or your own experience. And there's something else you might be interested in listening to now or looking up. It's the Peter Principle. So this was brought out by Lawrence J. Peter. It is quite an old concept. It's from 1969. It's a book called The Peter Principle. And this is the concept where people are promoted until they reach a level at which they are no longer competent. So I don't know if you're listening now, whether that's made you smile, because it certainly makes me grin a little bit, because I would say that's myself. I would feel that I ended up being promoted and promoted into positions that were taking me further and further away from my natural expertise, which in my case was as a teacher, to a position where I didn't really want those roles in the end. It just sort of happened almost like a snowballing. And the idea being that if we make it administration, if you're a brilliant administrator, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to be a brilliant manager of administrators. So that's this kind of this concept, really, that in teaching terms, if you're an excellent teacher, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be an excellent head teacher, as Matthew alluded to earlier, where it ends up being a very small proportion of the actual leadership and strategic role that you've got. So I don't know if, just things to mull over, really. And HR being one of those things that I found, so again, this is personal experience now, it's the thing that I found most distant from. When I'm thinking of the accounts, I can get the idea of money coming in, money going out, and trying to balance the books. With facilities, I get the sense that if the school is standing, I'm halfway there. If the kitchens are working, I'm halfway there to having dinner for the children. You know, it's equally with the boiler. But with HR, I don't know, Matthew, whether you've got any thought. I always felt it was the kind of unicorn floating around me, HR. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think an accountancy decision, a fundraising decision, marketing one are quite binary, and you can model and you can plan. But I think with human resources and the strategic management thereof and leadership within, you can't account for how your conversation is going to float with someone. You can't assume that the mechanisms for feedback and development that you have, you thought that were supportive, you thought that you were clear in your messaging, have actually not sat with that person at all. And that's why their performance has not improved, or that's why the recruitment process was flawed, because, you know, you've got two people hearing the same message in a very different way. And I think it's about going back to thinking about how as a practitioner you want to come across, how that affects your culture, but be honest with people. You know, I think that is what people need. How they receive that honesty is up to debate and up to the workplace that you work within. But just be honest. If things aren't working, tackle it head on. And I've had many an evening where I've rehearsed a conversation that I've got to have the following day, whether it be around attendance, performance, capability, and they've never gone. The conversations have never gone as I expected, ever. Yeah. They've been easier than I was expecting, or they've been completely different because of something I wasn't informed about. So I should have invested more time in finding out the facts than worrying about how the situation may play out. And I think that's quite important for people to reflect on if they're new to this area.
Hmm. Yeah. Supriya, any kind of closing thoughts as we come to an end today?
Yeah, I think, I agree with you and Matthew, what you're saying about HR being so important. So I bring back to the point I started with, that we don't realize its importance till actually it affects us as a leader when we are dealing with humans, human resource, the staff members, all the emotions, all the aspirations that comes with it. So we aren't just robots trying to deal with certain policies and how it's to be done. We always forget that there's a human element to it. And as head teachers, it is really important for us to have that measured response. And Matthew, I agree, as head teachers, we would have our rehearsed scripts and we'd be ready to launch and think that we have anticipated everything. But what we don't anticipate is that not knowing what has actually triggered some of the unhappiness that we are actually trying to deal with. So as head teachers, we might try to come across as a very neutral person and hold on to some amount of control. But this is something, it's absolutely a landmine. And again, I reiterate, I think head teachers should be trained, just like we're putting so much time and effort to train head teachers on finance. We should be training head teachers and how to be a good human resource leader.
Yeah, lovely. Oh, nice. That came to a nice little conclusion there now. So that's lovely. So thank you both. So just think now, you know, as you listen to this podcast, as you might be engaging with the resources, if you've come to our live sessions and as part of our Level 7 Senior Leader Apprenticeships or any of our apprenticeships, you know, think what would challenge your thinking today? That concept of the Peter Principle, you know, promoting to the point where people are almost being promoted into incompetency because they're doing roles they're not trained for. Talent hoarding and holding on to everybody, possibly a lazy leadership model, as Supriya mentioned. The idea of social capital then, and the hidden parts of the organization, where do you feel that there's the trust and the networking? You know, what value do you place on that? And finally, it's a little bit wordy, but organizational citizenship behavior, OCB, the discretionary effort that members of your teams might be putting in. And as Matthew said, the hidden aspects, possibly bits that you don't see, things that are keeping the organization and the glue to the organization. So what might be the biggest people risk in your organization? And as we close, what might you or your organization need to change as a result? So many thanks today to my co-host Supriya. And of course, a very special thank you to Matthew for joining us here today. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this episode with your network. It really helps us spread the word. So until next time, take care.